Good evening, you're tuned in and listening to a very special Champions of the Local Scene, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal. My name is Remy, your host for the next hour. With the summer upon us, so is the festival season inside of Montreal. One of these festivals is Fringe Fest, which supports local artists. From May 29th to June 18th, Fringe Festival takes over Montreal, including acts such as dance, musicians, theater, and magic, and more. All sales from the tickets go directly back to the artists and support them. We talked to one of the artistic directors behind this year's Fringe Festival, Amy Blackmore. So today we are talking to Amy Blackmore, one of the artistic directors behind the Montreal Fringe Festival, set for its 33rd edition, running from May 29th to June the 18th. In Montreal. So the Saint-Ambroise Montreal Fringe Festival is the city's summer block party of theater, dance, music, comedy, circus, and more. With over 800 performances, local and international artists take over Le Plateau, Mount Royal, to celebrate years of boundless creativity. Fringe celebrates diversity, accessibility, and artistic freedom, with 100% of the profit of the ticket sales made onto the shows going directly back to the artists themselves. Thank you for joining me, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
So what can audiences expect from this 33rd edition of the Fringe Festival, newcomers and guests who are returning back to the festival?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the main thing to expect is fun. Fringe is fun, and the act of fringing is even more fun. I love the idea of thinking about the fringe as an action and fringing as the verb, and folks just going out, meeting new people, and catching as many shows as they can, because they're all quite cheap and affordable, and they're short. So you can get away with seeing three shows in one day and then talking about them in between. And that's the real joy of fringing. It's about discovering what's out there.
One of the joys of the Fringe Festival is Fringe for All, which happens one night where all of the shows at the festival get put up on stage and they have 2 minutes to tell the audience about their show. So how would you describe it to someone who is new to Fringe and wants to know more about Fringe for All?
Great. Well, this year, the Fringe for All is on May 29th. It's at Club Soda. And what we do is we pack the room with people and all the artists show up and everyone has 2 minutes to take the stage to convince you to come see their show. I would say it's a long night, but it's a quick night. And the best thing to do is to show up with a program or pick one up when you walk in, bring a highlighter or a pen. And as the numbers go one by one, you highlight in your program what you're interested in seeing. And to be honest, I know a lot of folks that only decide what they're going to see after they come to the Fringe for All. It's the best way to get that kind of like avant-goût going.
So Fringe in the Park will be back as well too. So what activities can be found inside of the Fringe Park, are there going to be some family-friendly activities too for families to participate in with kids as well too?
Totally. Well, so Fringe Park, which is located at the corner of Rachel and Saint Laurent, it's really the hub. It's the place where fringers like to congregate, to hang out between shows. But it's also sort of become a festival on its own where there's lots of bands and music that's going on, including the Tinatrons that are playing this year, which we're really excited about. It's also where you find the drag races, which is a really fun event, drag queen competition, and the Fourth Families. You know, you can come by and listen to tunes, but you can also participate in the mini fringe, which is going to happen in the mornings on the Sundays. I'm particularly proud of our mini fringe programming. I think it's important to start fringing at a young age, because at the end of the day, fringe, it's all about values of diversity, accessibility, and artistic freedom. And I think those are definitely things, to start participating in when you're a kid.
So the live auction happened for the Montreal Fringe Festival. Now it's over though, but how can people still support Fringe and the artists, whether they buy tickets for the show or other ways that they can support the artists at this year's Fringe Festival?
I love this question so much, and I just want to say that supporting artists, that's our mission here. We're a festival for artists by artists. We're all artists ourselves, and the best way to support is to come. Honestly, it's to buy tickets, attend shows, but there's other ways too if you want to get more involved. We're always looking for volunteers to help us sell tickets, manage our venues, prepare for events, and we're also always on the lookout for new donations. And I will say at the Fringe, we do a lot with not a lot of cash. Every donation is important to us, and anyone who donates $25 or more does get a tax receipt. So you're welcome to contribute through CanadaHelps.ca. But at the end of the day, I think it's about coming out, being open-minded, and being there for the artists.
So before we get to our fun final question, I'll remind our audience that the Montreal Fringe Festival, the 33rd edition, runs from May 29th to June the 18th in Montreal. So for our final fun question, we take a look at Montreal a little bit because Fringe is iconic inside of Montreal. So what Montreal landmark deserves its own Fringe show, do you believe?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I'm very partial to the archway in Parc des Amériques. It's where we sit during setup and where we sit during the strike of the festival. We always sit under it eating our lunch. And for me, it's just an iconic plateau spot that does deserve its own like site-specific show. That would be the coolest thing.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Amy.
Well, thank you. See you at the Fringe.
See you at the Fringe. Welcome back. You are listening to a very special episode of Champions of the Local Scene, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. From May 29th to June 18th, Fringe Festival takes over Montreal, including dance, musicians, theater acts, and magic. All sales from the tickets go directly back to the artists. We talked to Flora Lee about her show Sadek 1965, a love story taking place at this year's Fringe Festival.
Sadek 1965 is a love story, a one-woman show written and performed by Flora Lee. This is a powerful solo storytelling piece. It's best described as Motorcycle Diaries meets Eat, Pray, Love, set in Vietnam. Thank you for joining me onto the show today, Flora. So what does it mean to you to have your show at this year's Fringe Festival inside of Montreal? And what does the Fringe Festival mean to you?
Wow, those are great questions. It means a whole lot to me to be performing my show in Montreal, because Montreal is where I call home. I was born in Quebec City, but spent most of my formative years in college in Montreal. I went to McGill University, and that is where my family still lives today. So Montreal is definitely home. And this show is my first one-woman show. And I've been touring with this show throughout the United States and a little bit of Canada last year. But I am very, very excited to bring it to Montreal and to get to invite friends and my family members to see the show.
So aside from my general introduction about the show, what is Sadek 1965 a love story about? Because it's about a pilgrimage, and the pilgrimage does happen, in fact, because in light of the death member of one of your family members. So maybe you can tell us more about the inspiration behind the show.
Absolutely. So in 2013, I felt that my life collapsed in front of my eyes. I was burnt out from my legal job. My father passed away, my father with whom I had a difficult relationship. And I came out of a long relationship, which almost felt like a divorce. And I felt like I needed to do something to find kind of a solution and find purpose in my life. And so I set on to motorcycle across Vietnam, my father's country, and also a country I knew absolutely nothing about. My father was a complete enigma, a black box. He immigrated to Canada in the mid-60s with a scholarship. But we grew up having absolutely no exposure to the Vietnamese culture. And when he passed away, and he was estranged from me for over a decade at that point, I decided that it was my chance to reconnect with my Vietnamese roots and see if maybe I could find some answers as to who my father was and how he was, how he behaves like a difficult man. And so I decided to motorcycle across Vietnam for 6 weeks solo. And so I flew into Hanoi, bought a motorcycle, and the show starts with me trying to figure out how to start the motorcycle, because Remy, I had never ridden a motorcycle before showing up in Vietnam. But good news, it can be learned. Anyone can learn how to drive a motorcycle. And then I drove 3,500 kilometers throughout the country, all the way until my father's hometown, and that's where the title is from. Sadek is a little village in the Mekong Delta where my father is from, and it is the end destination of my journey.
When you reached the end destination of your journey, did you feel a sense of a renewal of yourself? But also, did you have a sense that you understood your father a little bit more?
I did. So as I rode the motorcycle throughout the Vietnam, of course, I found out about this country and the culture, but it was also a travel back in time. During this trip, I discover the woman that my father dated in Vietnam before he left in the 60s, a woman by the name of Hien, and a woman who was still alive when I motorcycled in 2013. So by the end of the trip, I had made the decision to try to meet her in order to understand more about my father. And as it turns out, she was the key to the mystery of it all. So towards the end of the show, I meet this woman, Hien, in Sadek, and I'm not going to give you, I'm not going to
No.
spoil it for you, but she will
Perfect.
have a lot of answers for me.
Perfect. So speaking about Vietnam as well too, maybe you can describe one of your most profound memories or one of your most enjoyable memories about the trip, or maybe you can also describe one of your favorite meals that you had while you were over there as well too.
Oh my God, we don't have enough time to talk about the meals I had in Vietnam because the food there is absolutely fabulous. But I will tell you about one of my favorite memory that I talk about that in the show. So the motorcycle journey was very lonely. It was solitary. Not only I was alone on my motorcycle and riding for 6 to 8 hours every day, but I also did not speak the language. I grew up in Quebec City. My first language is French. English is the second, but I don't speak a word of Vietnamese. So I was riding through this country, seeing things, but not always being able to understand them, and let alone connect with the local people. And I tell the story in the show of one day stopping at a coffee shop, and a middle-aged Vietnamese woman come to my table. I order a coffee with my 2 words of Vietnamese, and then she decides to sit down across from me at the table. And up until then, I had kind of avoided interactions with local people because of the language barrier and the anxiety of not being able to communicate. But this woman was very, very patient with me. And we ended up having a conversation using my notebook and a translation app on my phone. She would write down a question, I would enter it in my phone, translate it, and then I would write down an answer. And we didn't exchange too much. It took a long time, but this was my first conversation with a Vietnamese person during my journey. And it's still to this day a very special memory.
All right, so before we get to our fun questions, I'm going to let our audience know that you can check out SEDEC 1965 of Love Story at this year's Fringe Festival happening on June 9th at 5 p.m., June 11th at 7 p.m., June 12th at 7:15 p.m., June 14th at 9:45 p.m., the 16th at 4 p.m., and the 17th at 10:45 p.m. It's happening at Au Patro V at this year's Fringe Festival. So, for now, for our fun questions. So, you said that you know Montreal a lot. So, what is one of your favorite restaurants here inside of Montreal that you always have to visit whenever you're in town?
Oh my God, let me think about that. There's so many good restaurants in Montreal. I used to live on Rue Saint-Dominique, close to Beaubien Street, which I think has really developed in the last few years. And I spent a lot of time in the Mile End area. And actually, I just found one. There is actually, it's a not a restaurant, it's a coffee shop, because you can find just some of the best espresso coffee in Montreal. There are people really passionate about their espresso. And I love to take my laptop to Piccolo Cafe, which I think, I don't know if it's still there, but it was on Du Parc Avenue. And if I go to Montreal, I will absolutely go get a latte at Piccolo Cafe.
And finally, if you were to take the show on the road to anywhere inside of Montreal, landmark or institution, where would the show end up?
In the arts district downtown Montreal, there's just so many beautiful public places, wonderful art installations, and I think Montreal has done such a great job at developing that that area, the arts district. I would find myself a little corner and do my show outside if I could.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you very much for this interview today, Flora. It was a pleasure.
Remy, the pleasure in mind. Thank you so much for having
Bye.
me.
to a very special Champions of the Local Scene episode, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. From May 29th to June 18th, Fringe Festival takes over Montreal, including theater acts, musicians, dance, and magic, and more. All sales from the tickets go directly back to the artists. We talked to Xander Chung and his team about their new show, Red Paper, taking place at this year's Fringe Festival.
So Red Paper is happening at this year's Fringe Festival. It is a theater piece, comedy of sorts, inside of a little bit of a way too. It runs from June the 8th to June the 18th at Mission Santa Cruz at this year's Fringe Festival, as we stated. The show is about Milo, who is a mediocre right-wing pundit trapped onto his toilet by an unapologetically queer spirit. The spirit forces him between a binary of two sets of colored toilet paper, both resulting in imminent doom. The show progresses as the spirit pulls queer voices that have been affected by his rhetoric into the space. Bit by bit, we pick apart his ideology. So directed by Bruce Lambie and Jordan Pentris, written by Xander Chung, the show is a fun bit of queer anti-fascist theater, along with it being an experience in toilet humor. The artistic ambition is to draw attention to the rhetoric and consequences regarding the weaponization of queer people within the political discourse and the very human cost that it leads to. So welcome, everybody. We can go around the room and you can introduce yourselves.
I suppose I'll start. Hey, Remy, it's been roughly about a year since I've last been on your show. It is great to see you again. My name is Xander Chung. For those who have not been introduced to my sultry, sultry voice, I am the playwright and producer for Red Paper, as well as last year's What About Albert, which you may or may not have seen. Great to be here.
Hi, my name is Jordan. I'm assistant directing this show, Red Paper. I've been involved with Xander in theater creation for a long time, notably What About Albert, which we did in the Fringe Festival last year. I'm super excited to be here and to be talking about our show and some of the ideas that it's put forth.
Hello, I'm Laura Rossiter. Thank you for having us on the show. I'm one of the actors in Red Paper. It's my first time acting in the Fringe Festival, so I'm very excited, and it's been a joy to work with this team, so I'm excited to bring you all the show.
I guess that I can pose the first question to Laura, since this is her first time at the Fringe Festival, since Xander and Jordan are veterans of the festival itself. So Laura, what does it mean to you to be at this year's Fringe Festival for the very first time?
It's very exciting, actually. I saw What About Albert. I saw some Fringe shows last year, which is my first time being a part of it, but this is my first time acting in it. And it's one of my first like theater roles. And I'm excited to be part of like all the activities like in the park and the Fringe for All, you know, and to like really be immersed into the theater that's happening or performing arts that are happening in the Montreal scene in June. So that's what I'm most looking forward to.
And what does it feel to be back at this year's Fringe Festival once again to Jordan and Xander? It must be exciting to be back.
Yeah, no, it is definitely exciting to be back. I love the festival. I love the hustle and bustle. I love the opportunity to meet new people and to really just bring challenging, aggressive, abrasive theater to the forefront. Whereas, you know, shows like these might not be as popular in the more mainstream style of theater with your seagulls and centaurs and whatnot, but you know, it's exciting.
And what was your inspiration for this show in general, Xander? Like, did it come from another piece of theater, or was it an original concept that you had?
Well, the idea of a toilet demon I'm very fond of this one Japanese urban legend, Akamoto, which is this little urban legend where you go into this toilet and there is this voice, this ominous voice, as you sit, like when you've sat down, and you know you're in the middle of your business and you're just being disturbed by this thing coming out of the toilet, going red paper or blue paper, and both, you know, results in certain doom. The entire idea, to my understanding, is that it's to teach people or to engender the idea of not bothering people when they're, you know, doing their business. I don't really like to use the term protagonist when describing Milo, but our pundit is such a blowhard that he just can't help himself. Mm-hmm. So he kind of falls into that trap. In terms of other influences, just honestly, the past, what? 5, 6, 7 years
with, since Gamergate.
And just the sheer deluge of anti-trans, anti-queer rhetoric that we are seeing, to the point where I think that it's fair to say that we are facing some very genocidal rhetoric, and I feel like we do need to start producing art that can, you know, not only create a space for healing, but also create a space for strength and reclaiming power, you know, to define those boundaries.
So the next question is for Jordan. So Jordan, why do you feel that this is an important show to attend at this year's Fringe Festival out of all the other shows that are there?
Recently, I've been doing a lot of work in more large scale productions, a lot of more mainstream sort of stuff. And then that theater to me seems very safe. It will talk about ideas in the most abstract way. It's been put to me before that there is a theater kid to neoliberal pipeline because it teaches us that performance of our virtues and values is enough. And I don't think that is true. And I think that one of the greatest strengths that Red Paper has and other art that seeks to put forth some genuine political change and praxis is this drive to on the one hand, accomplish something real, whether that be building support networks or making it abundantly clear the dangers that we are currently facing. But simply professing these things alone is not enough, and is why that in the work I've been doing trying to promote the show, I'm trying to integrate with this some real attempts to highlight specific ways that fascism is encroaching our society that people need to be aware about so they can take active steps towards bettering the community they live in.
So the next question goes to Laura. So of course, this show deals with toilet humor, but also along to a serious subject at the same time. So how does Red Paper combine and walk the fine balance between being a comedy and a drama at the same time?
I think there's comedy in all drama. And that's kind of how we get through life and get through trauma, in a sense. So I think that through everything that we go through, we have to find the humor in it in order to continue on. And I think, as of now, so far, the cast has been doing a great job of bringing that to life with the help of our wonderful directors and producer. And I've had a really great time exploring it as well. And I think her is a wonderful character to express both of those, both the drama and the humor, coming back to face Milo and the things he's done, but also like finding the joy and humor in confronting him.
And Xander, same question to you. How does the show that you wrote find the balance between the humor and also being a serious piece of theater as well, too?
Well, I don't think there is a clear delineation between serious and humorous theater. I feel like any piece of good media, there is a very strong balance between the two. To insist upon a perpetual self-serious stoic piece of art without any humor is to deny the humanity that is present within any piece. I feel that the kind of self-seriousness that a lot of people kind of insist upon creates this really odd fallacy that really serves as a thought-terminating cliche when it comes to critically thinking about these works, right? It moves to simply invalidate, because what? It makes you smile. It makes you laugh uncomfortably over a controversial statement from one character to another. No. All characters can be funny, just as all characters can be tragic, much like any human being can.
Very well said. So I'm going to remind our audience that Red Paper is happening at this year's Fringe Festival and is running from June the 8th to June the 18th at Mission Santa Cruz. And more information can be found at the Fringe Festival's website as well, too. So for our final fun question, I can pose it to anybody that would like to answer this one. So Fringe is known for being inside of Montreal and a Montreal landmark as a festival. So if Red Paper could go on the road to any Montreal institution or landmark besides Mission Santa Cruz, where would it end up for performance?
In the vein of performance as praxis, why don't we do somewhere very disruptive? We sit us in the middle of town hall or the middle of the courthouse, and people would pay attention and they would listen to the things I have to say, even if they would try to dismiss them.
Inside Francois Legault's bathroom.
Snaps and claps.
All right. Thank you very much for your time today. And the best of luck at this year's Fringe Festival. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everybody's got their shit. Who's got the guts to sit with it? Who's got the guts to sit with it? Everybody's on their own. So that way we never belong. But the mirror in another's eyes, that'll get you. Different ways to hide. Hiding out in the open, maybe I'm gonna let you down. Nothing's gonna make us new. What's done is not gonna undo. Hiding out in the open, maybe he's gonna let me down. Let's put it off for a few more days. And anyway, I'll pretend not to hear until you whisper it in my ear. Hot voice on my neck would change the context. I want you more. So love and dress.
Welcome back. You're listening to a very special Champions of the Local Scene, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. From May 29th to June 18th, Fringe Festival takes over Montreal, including dance, musicians, theater acts, and magic. All sales from the tickets go directly back to the artists. We talked to Fina about her new show, Ha 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 Da Vinci, taking place at this year's Fringe Festival. Ha 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 Da Vinci is premiering at this year's Fringe Festival inside of Montreal. So a little bit about the show. A tuba lights the way, beds make music, paintings come to life, and a radio delivers a message from the past. This whimsical production combines elements of illusion, music, and theater to weave a story that is at times silly and yet profound at the same time. So thank you, Fina, for joining me tonight for this interview.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So what does it mean to be performing or have your show at this year's Montreal Fringe Festival?
Oh my gosh, I feel so privileged to be able to take my solo show to Montreal. It's one of my all-time favorite cities. And to me, this is a real opportunity to share a production that I feel very, very proud of and that is a real joy to perform. And I'm really excited to take the show to a city that is so vibrant and filled with art and with multimedia art, which is a real element of the show. Is this, you know, it really overflows with aspects of illusion and music and theater. So I feel like a performance in Montreal is sort of a real pleasure for the show, particularly.
So besides my general introduction for the show, what was the general inspiration behind Ahaha Da Vinci? And I read further that the inspiration was also part of the Renaissance period too, inspired you to create the show as well too.
Yes. So I the kind of spark for the show happened when I learned about this gentleman whose name is Luca Pacioli, who lived during the Renaissance and was a close collaborator with Leonardo da Vinci throughout both of their lives. And Luca Pacioli was a magician. He's also was a mathematician and is considered sort of the founder of modern accounting, actually. But during the Renaissance, Luca Pacioli created the first book on sleight of hand magic. And Leonardo da Vinci illustrated that magic instructional book. When I found that out, I was just hooked. I was so curious. What was that collaboration like? What were those conversations like? And as I started learning more, all of these sort of magical elements of the show start sort of took shape. And that really was the inspiration originally for Haha Da Vinci.
So, how does illusion and music blend together inside of your show to create a perfect harmony, if you don't mind me asking, or is that a magician secret that you cannot reveal?
I love that question. Yeah, it's been a real exploration of taking elements of the story, turning them inside out, grappling with them, reframing them. One of my favorite effects that I created for the show is a moment when the Mona Lisa is torn into many, many pieces and it magically comes together again in a flash. There are essentially, as a musician and as an illusionist, I was able to kind of cross these different lines that are very blurred in the production. There's a bed that I play with my feet, like a piano. There is a lantern that attaches to my sousaphone. I really kind of had the opportunity to go to town and to, you know, push the boundaries of what I had made in the past. By really asking the question, well, what could happen here that I would least expect? And also, you know, by having the main character in the production, who's actually a grad student who gets transported back to the Renaissance accidentally and essentially has a conversation with Leonardo da Vinci through a radio about his experience with this illusion instructional manual. Everything that happens in the show, you know, I kind of thought, okay, well, what's the long way around? If something occurs in real life, there's the simple solution where, you know, okay, well, if I was just going throughout my day, you know, I would solve this way. But what's the more complicated route where something magical and surprising happens? So there's a lot of sort of exploration of that kind. And one of the challenges that I gave myself in creating the show was to use all of the mediums that I had worked in professionally in the past. And one of those is illusion, and one of them is is music. I'm a tubist and also a singer. And I also worked professionally as a dancer in New York for many years. So getting the opportunity to combine all of those different elements was one of the structures of the show, sort of one of the requirements that I set for myself. That was a long answer to your question.
No, but I think that it also gears up for my next question here. And I think that you explained it very well, but maybe we'll find a little bit more of an explanation here. So how does the show find the fine balance between being silly but also profound at the same time for audiences?
That's a great question. I feel like the show asks a lot of big questions, but in a pretty silly way. Or perhaps it asks silly questions, asks big questions and answers those questions in a real lighthearted way. The show really, at its heart, is about pushing the boundaries of your own creativity, taking risks, both artistic and personal, opening yourself up to partnership with somebody in either a personal way or in an artistic collaboration, finding the edge of what you want to make, pushing yourself to that further degree, exploring things that haven't been explored before, and the scariness of that place. Each of those sort of explorations, is explored through the medium of, playing a tuba, a singing Vitruvian man, poetry, guitar, music. I actually do some of the effects that Luca Pacioli created during the Renaissance. I perform a variation on his magic square effect from his magic instructional manual. And the feel of the show is extremely lighthearted, and the idea is to find the delight in everyday experiences and in the creative process. So I think, I think that at its heart, that line is walked by sort of exploring big, serious subjects about, big, serious questions about creativity and art and collaboration and risk, but exploring them in a way that is about play. The show is really about the joy of creativity. So I think that is sort of, at least my hope is that, and what I hear from people so far, is that they come away feeling sort of, the sense that, maybe anything is possible. that's kind of where I'm going with it.
Okay, before we get to our final fun question here, I'll remind our audience that Ha 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 Da Vinci is playing at this year's Fringe Festival from June 8th to June the 18th at Le Studio Multimédia du Conservatoire here inside of Montreal. More information is found onto the Fringe website. So for our final question, we normally ask this for all of our Fringe interviews. Montreal is a big place, as you know, and you know it very well. So if Ha 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 Da Vinci could perform at any Montreal landmark or any Montreal institution, where would it be performed?
Oh my gosh, that is such a great question. And I don't know that I have an answer. The way that I will answer that question is that I will explore Montreal during this latest visit to this city, with that question in mind, and hopefully I'll find the answer while I'm there for the month of June. I am certainly so honored to be performing at Le Studio Multimédia. It's such a beautiful space, and I think it'll be perfect for this production.
Bina, thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you all for tuning into this very special Champions of the Local Scene episode. As you can see, Fringe Montreal and the artists are true champions of the local scene. Visit montrealfringe.ca to find out more information or to get your tickets to get your fringe on. Thank you to everyone who took the time for the interviews on this week's episode, as well too thank you to our station manager Allison and program director Cameron for allowing this episode to air. Stay tuned for more Champions of Local Scene only heard on CJLO 1690 AM every Wednesdays from 6 to 7, and stay tuned from 7 to 9 for BBST, your very best and worst of country punk and metal, with Angelica. Every Wednesdays from 7 to 9, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM.
Everybody wants to be a DJ, everybody wants to be an MC, but being speakers are the best, and you don't have to guess. De La Soul Posse consists of three, and that's the magic number. This here piece of the pie is not dessert, but the cost that we dine. And three out of every darn time, the effect is, when a daisy grows in your mind. Showing true position, this here piece is kissing the part of the pie that's missing, where that negative number fills up the casualty. Maybe you can subtract it, you can call it your lucky partner, maybe you can call it your adjective. But odd as it may be, without my one and two, where would there be my three? Makes possum me, and that's the magic number.
What does it all mean?
Focus is formed by flaunts of the soul. Souls who flaunt style gain praises by pounds. Common on speakers who honor the scroll. Scroll written daily creates a new sound. Listeners listen, cause this here is wisdom. Wisdom of a speaker, a dove and a plug. Set aside a legal substance, you feed them for now. Get them high off this dialect drug. Time is a factor, so it's time to count. Count not the negative actions of one. Speakers of soul say it's time to shout. Three forms the soul to a positive sum. Dance to this fix and flex every muscle. Space can be filled if you ride like my lumber. Advance to the tune, but don't do the hustle. Shake, rattle, roll to my magic number. Now you may try to subtract it, but it just won't go away. Three times one.
What is it?
One, two, three.
That's a magic number.